I'm Kevin Roos. I'm a tech columnist at the New York Times.
I'm Casey Noon from Platformer.
We're the hosts of Hard Fork. Every week, we break down the biggest tech news, talk with industry players in Silicon Valley, and answer your most pressing questions about the future.
This week, Ed Helms from The Office comes to our office to talk about his new book and answer your hard questions about tech.
It feels like cigarettes in the 90s, right? Everybody knows, but like, we're still doing it.
You can find that conversation on this week's episode of Hard Fork, wherever you get your podcasts.
I feel like making love to you. I feel like making dreams come true.
Who sang that?
I don't know.
You know, come on.
I had some problems. No one could seem to solve them.
Who sang that?
That I don't know.
Anyone?
The murmur of a brook at eventide that ripples through a nook where two lovers hide.
I do want to say that I'm doing.
How dare you interrupt me? I was right.
I'm doing
you reaching my
he was
high
just
note.
Hitting.
Welcome to the New York Times podcast. I'm John Caramonica, critic of the New York Times.
I'm Joe Coscarelli. I'm a reporter at the New York Times.
My name is Jeff Goldblum. I'm it's an honor to be here as a guest on this great podcast and in this great building. I wish I worked here, and I
you actually just got hired. I don't know if you saw.
Yeah, exactly. The
hopefully
just went through.
Am I starting at the bottom? I hope so.
Never.
But
before we get going, I could spend the whole podcast running down your CV, but I just want to touch on a few things.
CV?
Yeah.
Wait, CV? I'm learning a lot.
Curriculum vitae. Your vital details.
It's a fancy word for a resume.
Yes.
Beautiful.
You know him from The Fly, Jurassic Park, Independence Day, The Big Chill, and on and on. More recently.
Who sang that? On and on, on and on, on and on. Who sang that?
You tell me.
I think it was Stephen Bishop. Is that possible? It wasn't Chris Cross, no. From the same era. I think it was Stephen Bishop. You know the song I'm talking about?
I think your mastery of the standards might be higher than mine.
And that's why we're having you on podcast.
Is that why? I have no mastery of anything.
Yeah.
And I'm a humble student of the standards, but I like them. If I mention them again, forgive me, and maybe you'll know several of them yourself.
They will be threaded throughout the conversation.
Well, let's talk all about that, yes, because the younger folks may not be as familiar with the classic American songbook,
That's
something of what we offer in our offering, you know, it's a still blooming thing in our
records. It's true, and
records.
We want to introduce your music to Taylor Swift fans, say, because we got a lot of them to listen to this show.
Really? I'm a Taylor Swift fan.
So I only did the top line of your CV. Can I keep going?
Please, I interrupted you. Please forgive me. My wife says I'm speaking. I'm still speaking. So
Joe
I know.
Wishes to cook. Shall we let him? We can let him cook.
Cook away.
Yeah.
So more recently, you played the wizard in Wicked.
Yes, sir.
You've been on television. RuPaul's Drag Race.
Yes, sir.
Search Party.
Yes, sir.
Chaos on Netflix.
That's correct.
You played The Wizard of Oz and you played Zeus within the last couple of years.
I did.
You also play yourself on the internet.
Where? When? I know, but what are you talking about?
You're a much-beloved boomer, I would say, even among the generations that came after you, which is not always the case.
Strong.
Strong
take.
I want to ask you about
strong take.
But most recently, you put out an album, Still Blooming.
Well said.
Up here on the shelf.
Got one here.
They're all over the place.
Got one here.
Hey, I signed a bunch of those. You know how many I signed?
How many?
I would like to know.
I was going
to
say 750.
You want to guess one more time? I don't want to hold you to that first guess.
2,500.
Okay.
I'm going to say 3,500.
3,500. I signed 14,000.
What?
Come on.
Yep. I did.
14,000.
Yeah. And my signature got really, it's good. It's authentic and it's my signature.
Do you do like the wrist thing? You do that?
I tell you, after one session, I was a little bit like this.
Carpal tunneled out.
If I have to write a post-it note at this point, by hand, then I get a cramp.
You didn't do the auto pen? No auto pen?
Oh, no.
No AI
signatures? This is the old fashioned way.
Okay.
This is my signature. I was proud of it. I got better and better, in fact. And I'm a connoisseur of the flair of the, you know, the pen. Which pen? Yeah, some of me may get in black, some in this delicious gold, which was more wet, you know, and lasted longer.
Love a wet signature.
14,000. I did it.
So you're expecting to sell a lot of albums.
Well, you know, I think we've already sold a bunch of albums.
Is that gratifying to you in a way that maybe is not accessible to you at this moment in your career on screen? Does it scratch a different itch?
Well put. I'll tell you a couple of things. Yeah, yes, it is. I've never been a kind of a marketeer or a careerist or a numbers businessman of any kind. So I would do a lot of movies here and there from the start just for the sheer creative fun of it. And hopefully they reached an ear and an audience. But, you know, there are a lot of different kind of movies. It's fun being in a popular movie like Jurassic Park or, you know,
Wicked.
Wicked. Yes, it's really fun. So that's great, because if you're proud of it and it reaches somebody's heart and ear and house, it's really, really sweet. And there's a similar, but a little different flavor in my bosom from having done these records. This is the fourth record that we've done.
This is you flexing your sort of semi-secret talent as a lifelong jazz pianist. Yeah. And this album, as you alluded to, features vocals from your Wicked co-stars, Ariana Grande.
Cynthia Erivo.
And also one of my favorite moonlighting singers, Scarlett Johansson.
Yes, and one of my favorite people, one of the best actors in the whole world that's ever been, Scarlett Johansson. I've known her for a long time.
So
we did a couple
Ariana
of those Wes Anderson
and Cynthia,
movies.
Yeah,
yes.
They make sense, but talk a little bit about how Scarlett ended up here.
So Scarlett and I met each other a long time ago. You know, I've been around, and then we were in a couple of Wes Anderson movies together. We did Voices in Isle of Dogs, and then Asteroid City. She was fantastic.
Which we talked about on this very show.
I'm proud of that movie. I have a little part in it. And at the New York, right near here, premiere of Asteroid City, we got to talking just randomly and without any strategy on my part about music and again, I'm doing this, I'm recording, and would you ever like to record? Yes, she said. And hey, I have an idea. She had ideas. She said, Bossa Nova, I like, which I'm crazy about. And then she said she had this idea, out of the tree of life, I just picked me a plum. That song, you know that.
Yeah, the best is yet to come.
And our arrangers, Alex Frank and Joe Bagg, who arrange everything on this album, got the right key for her and recorded her and arranged it for her, like they did with Cynthia and Ariana. And Maya Sykes, by the way, who's terrific on this album, does Stella by Starlight. Speaking of standards, do you guys know that? Do you guys at home know that? This audience, it's one of the classics that's been recorded many times. Do you know it?
I know it, but we'll play a hint of it. Symphonic theme that is Stella by Starlight and not a dream. You play piano and you sing.
Yes, sir.
But there are a number of songs that you've put out on which you don't sing.
Oh, yeah. Mostly.
Why?
I don't sing.
Why? And I actually want to talk about this.
If you have the grip on the lyrics and the tune, like, why are you not?
Well, you're so sweet.
Wicked, maybe the shortest song.
Yes.
Is that?
I am a sentimental man. Yes.
Who always longed to be a father. That's why I do the best I can.
People loved your portrayal of the wizard, which I thought you brought a lot of Jeff Goldblum to. Yeah. They called you puckish. They called you wonderfully smarmy. They said you still have charm.
Oh, okay.
Who said that?
They said solid casting.
Oh, solid. That may not go on my, you know.
You relished the role's gloriously hammy showmanship. But they also said, you know, that your singing was maybe not the strongest in the film.
Well, look, if you're singing beside Cynthia Erivo and Ariana Grande and Jonathan Bailey and everybody else, oh my gosh, that's
a really high bar.
With me, a high bar. That's the highest bar that's ever been of all Homo sapiens.
Was that anxiety inducing then? Because the day that you're doing that on set, are you walking onto the set and being like,
I should have been from the moment I walked on set for any reason, you know, intimidated. They're the greatest actors in the world. They're incomparable, that they can do both things and many things. If I had any sense about me, I would have been shy. And and
doesn't seem like your thing to be shy.
Well, I'm so bushy-tailed and just happy to be around and interested in interesting people. And how can you not be around them and be just, you know, leave all your, you know, cares behind in favor of your fascination and enchantment with them. And out of that comes a kind of, you know, a joie de vivre and musicality on my part. I started singing everything that I could think of because they sang it with me.
Of course.
And then on the day that I had to sing to them, you know, well, I must say I'm nothing if not conscientious besides being, you know, full of verve, you know, speaking of our
thin,
label.
I
had worked on it. So,
yeah.
So I do have a voice that's less powerful, as you say, or
no, those were the reviewers, not
okay,
me.
Okay. No. But I think it has, I know my limitations and everybody's got their own voice. Mm-hmm. And in my case, I've kind of worked on it. I've studied it. I've tried to learn about it. And I've finally come to accept and realize and celebrate and make use of as creatively as I can what I've got. Which is okay. I'm grateful for what I've got. I like my voice and I like to sing. And of course, some of the greatest music is silence. Errol Garner taught us that.
John Cage.
You know, everybody knows that. That listen, right now in this room, listen. That's very beautiful. Mm-hmm. That's really beautiful. And silence is golden, or gold bloom, or still blooming.
Okay, so we've watched you be on now for an hour.
You think so?
And we saw you move through the world and how people react to you, you know, say hi to my daughter. Can you give a message to my, you know, like, you mean a lot to me.
I didn't know you guys were witnessing all that.
From afar, but we
journalism.
We were doing journalism.
Yeah, I see.
Yeah.
So good.
You know, presumably you do that. You're going to do this for more hours when you leave here. And then at some point tonight, you're going to be wherever you are in a hotel.
Yes.
And you're going to feel that silence that we just felt when you you stopped for a moment. Like, how do you turn off after? You seem to be an extrovert, if I had to guess.
You're sure.
And you get a charge out of being around people and feeding off of people and their energies and learning about them and sharing your passions, et cetera. Like, how do you then turn off? And is it scary at all when you enter that quiet zone?
Good question. I know what you're talking about. Here's how I think about it. I don't feel like I'm on in the way sometimes I hear that word, like, you know, sometimes people who take up too much oxygen in the room and are hungry for attention, you know, the type. That's not my favorite type, you know, speaking generally. And I don't feel like I'm like that. I don't feel like I turn it on like that.
It's not a performed.
It's not
performed.
It's not a performance.
You don't relate to that idea.
Not really. And I don't feel like it's inauthentic.
There you go.
So even I feel like my interest in people is real, and I'm thrilled to be here, really. And I'm just kind of, here's how I think about it. I'm just kind of, when I have an opportunity to, letting that, you know, run free.
Mm-hmm.
That's feels wholesome to me and nourishing. And so there's no not there when it's not there, when I'm not around people. In fact, I like being by myself, and I have plenty to do by myself. Mm-hmm. I play the piano by myself. I need time by myself to get my homework done and do all sorts of things. And I like good quiet time. I like to eat in restaurants that are rather quiet, you know. Like that. I'm reading these couple of books about Frank Sinatra, and I'm not one of these types who must have chaos and activity around me, like I gather he did a bit, and can't be alone.
Sure.
It's frightened to be alone, maybe. Who knows if that's fair about him. But that's not me.
Also, it's part of your acting training. I mean, this is something I've read you say in a read that you've said in the past, which is in order to be interesting, you should be interested. This is an important technique.
Do you live the Meisner method?
Thank you for both those. In a way, Sandy Meisner was very brilliant. He got him at a big time in my life. at first through other teachers at Carnegie Mellon University. When I was 15, when I was first getting introduced mm-hmm. and enthralled with this and obsessed with this idea of being an actor, and then studied with him in when I was 17, 18, 19. So he has had a profound impact on me. And yes, I thought that his use what exists credo and be present and be alive and be spontaneous, and that's part of good acting, had obviously crossover relevance to real life. I was a kind of interested in meditation and how one lives a good life too. Yeah. So it did then, and it does now, still have something to do with the way I try to, what I aspire to and how I function. And so, yes, I need to, come alive and enjoy myself mm-hmm. and allow myself to enjoy myself, which includes my real interest and delight in other people. So that's some of the answer.
It is journalistic in a way, I would say, because we're interested in other people professionally.
Yes, I know.
And also personally.
I've played journalists, you know.
We're going to get to that.
Okay.
I am aware.
I didn't think of it until now. Between the lines, of course, I played the rock critic for Village Voice. I played you, essentially.
Literally.
That's right. I had a good time with our friends Bruno Kirby and many other people. Mm-hmm. Joan Michelle Silver.
Did you base that on a specific rock critic? Did you meet with any rock critics? Did you know any rock critics at the time? Like, was that part of your research?
This would have been the mid-70s. So it's not
this is 76.
This is the, whether it was people at Rolling Stone, you're sort of Ben Vaughn Torres's. It could have been at The Voice, Lester Bangs, The Cream and Ecosystem, Bob Christgau, obviously.
John Landau.
Yeah, John Landau.
How about that? You guys are good. Boy, I should have talked to you then. I wish I had. I didn't know. That was still a few years out of school. So I am still, as I still am, developing my preparatory approach. Mm-hmm. What best to do? What do you need? What don't you need? I might have gotten a kick out of that. No, I didn't know how to do that exactly yet. I think I was reading some rock criticism mm-hmm. and this and that. But,
we'll come back to, we have some music credit.
And then, of course, in The Big Chill, I play that People magazine reporter. Mm-hmm. So, and then I did a pilot.
That, I think.
Yeah.
I did a pilot for, now that I'm remembering it, for television. It was 2 hours with Lake Bell. It was her first thing.
Shout out to Lake Bell.
Yeah, shout out Lake Bell. Great. I love her.
I love
Thumbs
her.
Up.
I love her. She was my partner. It was called War Correspondent.
Can I ask about last night?
You certainly can.
You were at the Met Gala last night, which means you need a smoothie right now.
You need hydration and nourishment.
Watch this so you can feel free to keep the cameras rolling.
Yeah, yeah.
This is me and my natural. This is one of my
double cupping.
Wow, they got you two.
Thank you. That's just two. This is embarrassing.
This is indulgent.
Thank you so much, Sophia.
There was a Surgeon's General warning about this much smoothie.
Put a bookmark in that. I was outside after this delightful gala ball, and we went to, Emily Goldblum and I went to the party right afterwards at the Carlyle Hotel. Okay. It was for Cartier, I think I'm pronouncing that correctly, and Jean-Baptiste, who's also on Verve, I believe, mm-hmm. the great Jean-Baptiste, played there, and it was delightful. So we spent some time mm-hmm. there, and then from there went to the great people at GQ. And
shout out our friends at GQ.
Our friends at GQ. Will
Sam,
Welsh, I'll bet you
gang.
Know.
Yep,
the
yep,
whole
yep.
gang. They're okay. spectacular. And who hosted that party was Grace Wales Bonner, who had
dressed
me and seven other people.
A very regal getup, I should say.
You're so nice. Thank you. Well, I was thrilled. As I've said, I was choked up, trying it on. She's so spectacular.
The power of that cape, I thought, was quite intense.
The power of that cape and everything, the care of every detail on that thing and the brilliance of its design. It was very, very wonderful. And the whole theme of the gala to which mm-hmm. that adhered, and it was
Black dandyism.
Were you up
on Black dandies?
Oh, I met Monica Miller.
Yep.
Monica Miller. I talked to her, starstruck with all of those people. The exhibition itself, just superb. And I went through it too quickly. You could spend a lot of time there. There's much to learn. It's very powerful. It's important. It's worthwhile. It's relevant. And I was thrilled to be a part of it.
Great book. Great big catalog as well. Also, but you're also quite known for wearing Prada. I see you wearing Prada today.
Oh, yes. Yes, I am.
You know, I say,
hey, good eye.
It's So,
well, I love Prada. You know, Mrs. Prada has been very kind to me. I'm honored and lucky to know her a little bit. And this is a Prada.
This whole thing?
It's a heavy piece.
It's a heavy piece.
It's a heavy
piece. In the sense of weight-wise.
You can
do anything. That's a thick piece of leather.
Heavy gauge.
Yeah. Now, I don't know if it's... Yeah. Anyway. I love it.
So
this
was your
thing.
Second
these pants,
Met Gala.
If you've noticed these pants with this kind of faux belt... Ooh, it's very beautifully designed. Anyway, I'm a fan of these kind of things. And so it's a thrill to be part of that little endeavor. Last night was great. So we went to GQ. Grace Wales-Barner was there. And then we got home, 3-ish, 2:30, 3-ish, and then got to bed asleep.
Still were up early for breakfast.
You know, I knew I had a day's work. This was the centerpiece of my obligation and delight. And so I, you know, tried to set my, system to, be okay here. And I had a good breakfast, a very delicious breakfast. We could talk all about food, but delicious.
Which we will.
Let's do it. And healthful breakfast. And then from there, did some of my piano, not as much as I always do, but I got some in.
Your morning piano.
My morning
routine.
Piano.
Yeah.
And then... Oh, by the way, I mentioned the Carlisle Hotel. Yeah. We're going to be playing there. And some of what I'm playing in my daily piano is the development and investigation and practice of those songs that I know are going to be on the set list. So that's what I did. I did some of them this morning. And then, you know what? I still am. You know, I don't have coffee these days. No caffeine. Mm-hmm. This is just me on the natch after breakfast. And I'm still excited. I know my system a little bit. I'll bet I'll crash after this at some point. Maybe tonight will be a very early night and a quiet night with Emily. But I'm still a little jazzed up from the highly stimulating bunch of people that you've met.
Tell us a funny run-in.
Meet anyone who you didn't know.
What happens when you get inside and the cameras are off?
Told me to never name drop Robert De Niro.
Well, it's funny how that works.
isn't it funny? No, that's a joke. I met a bunch of people. Should I say?
Yeah, let's go.
A couple of people.
Oh, what was a great conversation?
Too numerous to mention, but I had a little exchange with Kamala Harris.
Wow.
As I saw her right in front of Frederick Douglass's top hat. And we talked a little bit.
What was your opening?
Well, it first said, hi. See, this guy says, hi, I'm Doug. I said, Doug Emhoff, I know. It's a thrill to meet you. I'd never met either of them. I said, how are you doing? And I was supportive.
And how are their spirits?
They were good. They were good. And in fact, Kamala, I won't betray the confidence of this little exchange. Not that she would mind, perhaps, but she gave some very stirring a few words of leadership. And I said, thank you. And thank you. I was thrilled to see her. Mm-hmm. And then, oh my gosh, everybody else. Who was at my table? Shibuzi.
Yeah.
Nicki Minaj.
Nicki Minaj is at your table?
Yes, sir. Right across
the
way.
Did you guys chat?
We chopped it up a little bit.
What does she know you from?
That's Nicki Minaj, we didn't get into that.
She didn't say, I forgot my mantra.
She did not start quoting any of my movies, but Charlie XCX, I had a delightful exchange with. She was great. I was just thrilled to see her. And Lana Del Rey, I was thrilled to see her, a big fan.
She could sing on your next album, I think. I think she loves the standards.
Yes.
That would be a dream.
You put it out in the world. That's what the show's
dream
for.
Come true.
Put it out in the world.
We're working. There are good things to come, and there people on our wish list, you know, she would be wonderful. Charlie XCX would be.
I don't know how many standards Charlie knows.
I think Lana
anything that she would want to know. But Leve, we talked to LA premiere of Wicked, and she said she was, we talked about it. She said she might be interested. And Billie Eilish, I'm crazy about.
Does Billie Eilish seem kind of like a standard singer to you?
John's floating one of his
I'll bet she could do anything.
Points.
This is one of my, I would say, reviled takes out in the world. Mm-hmm. But I believe that the singer that Billie Eilish has the most in common with is Tony Bennett. In terms of the heaviness of the voice, in terms of her sense of there's a stoicism in the purpose of the singing. And I when I hear her sing, I immediately go to that generation. I don't think of contemporary pop. I immediately go back to that era.
Hey,
can you be the person that ties the loop?
I don't know.
And bring
if I could be anything at all, but I'm crazy about her.
Just putting this out there.
That
just
might be wonderful.
And a gem to take home with you.
Thank you so much.
What did you say?
Stoicism?
The stoicism and the purpose of the voice.
Purposeful stoicism.
That's why they pay him the big bucks as a rock critic.
I'm sure. You know? You're a phrase maker and a wise, wise man. What's that?
My non-existent Rolex.
Oh.
Oh, no Cartier tanks here.
Did you smoke a cigarette in the bathroom? That's like the, I feel like, you know, when in
I've heard a little bit about that.
I bet you have.
I did not smoke. I've never smoked.
In life?
I've never smoked
in
life. I've
also never smoked in life, but it's so rare to encounter.
There you go. Yeah. I had to smoke cigars in a couple of movies, but it made me dizzy. No, smoking's no good for you. It's
hard to argue with that.
Yeah, unhealthy. And I've never had a cavity or a filling in my in any of my teeth.
Boy wonder. It's unbelievable.
No.
Last year, if I'm not mistaken, was your first Met Gala. Correct?
That's right.
What took them so
Anna
long?
Wintour is so nice. I saw her last night. She's been very generous to me. She was great.
But here's my question, right? You're Jeff Goldblum. You've been outside. You've been outside. Do you feel something shifted that led to now you being in whatever that, you know, Illuminati room is? You know, like, what changed where they said, get Goldblum in the building? Like, what was the shift?
I don't know. You know, I'm not so focused on the fleeting continuum and ups and downs of whatever is going on here.
That's our job. That's our job.
Yeah, okay.
But so, you feel the...
Well, I know this. I'm grateful. I'm wildly appreciative that this thing that I wrote on the shower about that I was one obsessed with early on has actually taken place, you know, decade after decade now. And the more recent things in the last decade, the last few years, seem to be as, you know, delicious as ever. Mm-hmm. I feel at the top of my form. I've prepared myself, as Abraham Lincoln said, I shall study and prepare myself so that when my chance comes, I shall be ready. Mr. Brivac, our seventh grade teacher, wrote that on the board. And I, you know, it's not the worst thing in the world. I think it's kind of true. So I still try to, and I'm a late bloomer and I'm still blooming, as we did joke about on this album title. And the best things are happening and the best is yet to come, it feels like to me, because I've prepared myself and, you know, I could keel over during this conversation, but it feels like I'm at the height of my powers musically. I feel every day because I play.
Everything is going like this.
It feels like that every day. I play and I can I'll be darned to say feel that I'm playing better today than I did yesterday or ever, and likewise in my acting. And I have these two kids and the greatest marriage to Emily, and she's the greatest person, and we have a great life. So it's kind of blossom.
What was that?
What's up, everybody? It's John. We're gonna take a quick break from the Jeff Goldblum experience. We're going to talk about the Song of the Week. You can find the Song of the Week clips with me driving around in my car, talking about the most important new songs on the podcast, Instagram, TikTok, and YouTube channels. Those are all at Popcast. This week, we're going to talk about the new Lorde single, What Was That? Heard the new Lorde song? Get in. Let's talk about it. Baby, what was that? What Was That is, from a distance, this incredibly exuberant electropop song. It feels bright. It feels optimistic. It really sounds like Lorde is accessing a positive memory where something special happened that slipped away from her. What was that? So we're gonna talk about Lorde, but first, I think, a note about Charlie XCX. Last year, Charlie XCX released Brat, the most consequential pop album of 2024.
Hi, girl.
Yeah, hey.
No matter what you think of the album itself, it absolutely reframed how pop singers are expressing themselves. And you saw this on the remixes. Billie Eilish showed up with a much looser version of herself, and notably, so did Lorde. For the last couple years, I've been at war in my body. I tried to starve myself thinner, and then I get hear Lord talking about body anxiety. You hear Lord talking about self-doubt. She's sneaking in a little bit of a preview of the Lord we're getting now on this new single, What Was That, on that prior remix.
I cover up all the mirrors, I can't see myself yet.
One of the things that has always stuck out about Lorde and her relationship to other pop stars is she's always seemed wiser than her years. She always seemed incredibly sharp, almost like someone who knew too much. What you're getting with this Lorde is actually something of the opposite. This is Lorde at her lightest, at her loosest. It's as if she sipped a little bit of that Charlie Brat water and incorporated it back into her own music.
MDMA in the back garden, blow our pupils up. We kiss for hours straight, but baby, what was that?
Now look, you can read this one of two ways. If you're reading it optimistically, this is a liberation anthem. This is someone shaking off the reins of all that precocity, all of that self-control, and says, I'm ready to have a good time, let's go. On the other hand, that seriousness of purpose, that part of Lorde that always seemed to know something that her peers just simply didn't, I don't know that that's here anymore.
When in the light down, baby, so bright, I face reality.
Is this new song peak Lorde? I'm not sure it is. The thing that's always set her apart is she hasn't been terribly concerned with the prevailing winds that are happening in pop music. In this song, Lorde's asking, what was that? But the question that she's always been best at answering is what comes next.
Hi, this is Lori Leibovich, editor of Well at the New York Times. There's a lot of misinformation in the health and wellness space. But at the New York Times, no matter what the topic, we apply the same journalistic standards to everything we write about, whether it's the gut microbiome or how to get a good night's sleep, even if we're talking about something like, is it bad for me to drink coffee on an empty stomach? Everything that our readers get when they dig into a Well article has been vetted. Our reporters are consulting experts, calling dozens of people, doing the research. It can go on for months so that you can make great decisions about your physical health and your mental health. We take our reporting extra seriously because we know New York Times subscribers are counting on us. If you already subscribe, thank you. If you'd like to subscribe, go to nytimes.com/subscribe.
And now, back with me, Joe, and Jeff Goldblum on the Popcast Couch.
This moment in your career has sort of coincided with the arrival of the Jeff Goldblum persona, which I think has existed for many years. I mean, there's literally a compilation on YouTube, Remixing Your Laugh, that has like 4 million views. Yeah. You know, you've been on Sneaker Shopping, you've been on Hot Ones, mm-hmm. you bring a lot of yourself to the roles you play on screen now, you know, the wizard, I think.
I like to characterize, you know, I like a, you
of
know,
course,
you
I'm know. Not saying you can't disappear into a role, but you do the thing that a lot of the best movie stars do, which is you play off of your own people's associations.
Your
meta
narrative.
Yes, your
meta narrative.
You know, John Wayne does this. Tom Cruise does this. George Clooney, who you mentioned earlier, does this. These are leading men with huge, you know, careers behind them. And you've been in dozens and dozens of films, but you've managed to find your own lane of that. Like, do you think of this phase of your life and career as distinct from the ones that came before it because there's more Jeff Goldblum in it and you have more to play around with?
I know what you mean. Not distinct. It feels like a, you know, a step-by-step, you know, organic, one thing led to another. You know, I'm still trying to get better, but I found more of, myself in life, I think, somehow.
We have a colleague downstairs who said to me before this interview, I thought he put it very simply. He was like, he makes every movie better. If he's in the movie, it's better. And that can be just for a moment. And I think, like, that's part of what I mean, that you're bringing, like, when you appear on screen, there's this moment of recognition, like, it's Jeff. You know what I mean? Like, and people can laugh with that and they can play with that.
If that's what's needed in the movie. Yeah, I try to, you know, I love a good director. You know, I don't think you can be good unless you have a good
material. And you've worked
material,
with so
but a good
many
director.
Of them.
Yeah,
I mean, Woody Allen, Altman, Spielberg,
Wes Anderson. You know, I could go on and on and on and on.
And they know how to use you. Wes Anderson, for instance, is so brilliant and can use somebody even who's you know, displayed himself in many things in a different way.
Yeah, who's left on your list? Like, who's the dream list of directors that you have yet to work with?
Last year at the Met Ball, you know, I went to that same party at Cafe Carlyle, and Sofia Coppola was the host, and I told her how much I loved Priscilla that year, and she's fantastic. Jane Campion, I met in the last couple of years, a wonderful director. You know, P.T. Anderson. You know, as I said, the Coen brothers, if they're, you know, I don't know if they're making movies together, but I adore.
You'll take either one.
So yeah, I certainly would. So many there. They're the Safdie brothers. There are a lot of directors I haven't worked with, certainly, that I adore. So, like that. Hey, you know what you made me think of too, is a kind of psychological, creative lighthouse and North Star that I kind of found the other day. Mm-hmm. I'm flying here and there. At the airport, I was at the carousel waiting for my bags, which can sometimes for me be a little stressful. Oh, I hope they didn't lose it. When's mine coming out? I'm in a hurry, this and that. I'll tell you, there was a mother with a baby, maybe in her near one or something like that, in a stroller. And they were positioned exactly so they could see, the baby could see all the bags going off, and then they'd go that way, away from her. The baby was fixated on where the bags were coming out. And every single bag that came down and hit the thing, she laughed out loud, yeah, like my favorite, you know, infectious, yeah, you know, I go on YouTube because I like Julie Louis-Dreyfus, you know, cracking up the blooper reel. And that makes me laugh more than anything else, you know.
Some people are listening to you laughing that way.
Well, yeah. I do like people laughing. This baby was in a way that I had never seen before. But everyone that came down, she laughed as though she had forgotten.
Yeah,
that
she'd never seen it before.
It was new. It was a new, fresh, hilarious thing to her. And I thought, well, there it is. That's how to live life, and not a bad way to act or to make music. And if you're interested in improvisation and this and that and being present, but not a bad way to live and find the hilarity in it and the delight in life. That was it. I'll keep that in mind, because now with kids and everything going on in the world, for instance, and if you've got a relationship, as we know, the life can be a struggle.
Sure.
But it's not bad to have a sense of humor and to find things funny. Somebody told me as we were starting to have kids, hey, just remember this, they said. I forget who it was, but I remember the conversation. They said, just remember this, the kids are hilarious. Mm. Even when they're giving you problems, and even when they're hilarious.
Joe has a young child.
I do. I have a one-year-old.
You do?
Yeah.
What's the name of your?
Her name is Tony. Her name's Antonia.
Antonia.
We call her Tony. Mm-hmm.
Isn't that beautiful? Congratulations.
Thank you. But yes, the joy, the laughter, the jokes. You know, it's all. She's a physical comedian already, so it's like that's
par excellence.
Yeah, well, and you see it as sort of more elemental and foundational than you ever would have imagined, like this idea of finding humor and stuff when you see it through
that's
her
right.
eyes.
Not only humor, but you know, fascination in life. They are talk about unselfconscious.
Of the two of us, you know, Joe is maybe a little bit more of the cineast, and I would say I am a connoisseur of what some might term low culture, but I don't believe it's
what
low culture. Low culture. YouTube videos, the internet,
TikTok, HGTV.
I don't think there's anything low or high.
I agree.
Yeah. You know, we love everything.
I'm acknowledging the counter voices in the room.
Well, it's called Popcast.
Yes.
Isn't that delightful? Hey, by the way, if we center on jazz, we could call this Bopcast.
Bopcast, that's our next project.
Okay.
Yeah.
But, you know.
But one thing that I know,
yeah,
as Joe mentioned before, you did Hot Ones.
Spicy Daddy. Yeah, I like it. Zaddy.
You did Sneaker Shopping. And one of the things that I really admire about both of those episodes is you had a particular zeal And you embraced the novelty of being in the setting in a way that I find that other people who do those shows, maybe they feel like they've seen a few of them, they know what the beats are, and then they show up to fulfill the beats of the show. However, your Hot Ones is like twice as long as most other Hot Ones. your episode of Sneaker Shopping is like very playful and like grounded in a different set of realities than the normal sneaker shopping. And so I wonder, when you walk onto that, I see you walked in here with notes today. I know you have our names on note cards to get them memorized. Talk to me about prepping for those kinds of settings. And potentially this, what's on the paper?
I'll tell you everything. This is what I've been carrying around for me. I should rewrite it because it's hard to read my own writing. But with this obligation, because I'm serious, I take this seriously. I'm trying to spread the word about this album, for instance. Mm-hmm. And I'm proud of the album. And
sure.
Here I am, you know, representing people who have worked hard and the labels who have invested mm-hmm. in it, you know, emotionally and in every other way. So I have an obligation. So I take it seriously mm-hmm. and try to do it. So if I'm promoting the record or Wicked, I go, you know, how do we communicate this? Not sell it. I'm not a salesman. Mm-hmm. But how can I communicate that highlights the right thing, you know?
And in the setting.
In the setting. And then how can I connect here? You know, how can I connect with mm-hmm. you guys? You know, I like to know people's names on the mm-hmm. set. I like to know all the sure. crew people's names. And so I kind of study the call sheet. And that's kind of nice because even if I'm acting so-called, it's nice to feel a connection with this family mm-hmm. of people. You know, as Robert Altman, with whom I worked on several things and who was a great teacher and a great artist. He said he called his company Sandcastle mm-hmm. because he said, you know, what we're doing here is an art piece every bit as much as the final result. Yeah. So it's the, you know, look, human beings need to figure out ways to be together, really.
Find joy in the contours of these things that maybe other people would find, I don't want to say onerous, but
work, literally.
Work, redundant, yeah. Tiring. But you can see in your eyes, you see the expertise of someone sitting across from you who has a particular skill set that maybe you haven't encountered before. And you find wonder in that.
I sure do.
At least that's how it seems. As an observer. That's how it seems, as an observer.
Yeah. Well,
yeah, that's right. And I mean, that's what I aspire to. And I mean, you guys are fascinating guys. And who would I be if I wasn't, you know, didn't use this opportunity and hanker for sure. hours more if I could.
A lesson to a lot of you guys.
There you go. So I won't go on because we don't want to waste time. But yeah, I could talk to you. You know, I taught acting for a couple of decades whenever I wasn't working. I like the classroom and I like, you know, using myself to contribute in any small way I can. And I've done a bunch of these and it interests me how to communicate best and, you know, and you know, leave people a little better off. But, you know, for instance, here are the dates that we're going to be around, you know, that we go to, you know, everybody
where you're
does
performing.
This. Yeah, where we're performing. If
so
they
you have
wanna.
This Cafe Carlyle show.
Cafe Carlyle.
Have you ever sat in with Woody there? I know Woody Allen plays there.
I did. Our band played there a few years ago, and he had a Monday, and I watched Monday before we started our Tuesday. And, they asked me up, and I sat in a couple of times. That was very much fun. I like that room. But when are we? May 27th through 31st. We're going to be Atlanta before that. After that, Toronto and Montreal Jazz
can
Festival.
Can we pull up?
Chicago.
Can we pull up?
Pull up?
To the Cafe Carlyle. Can we come to the show?
You have to come. You'll be the guests of honor.
How many people have you told that to?
You're so funny. But tell me if you want to come, really, though. Local. And you will be...
I'm interested just for a minute in your relationship with Woody. You know, you were one of the actors in 2019, a handful of years ago, when there was some agita in the industry about whether or not it was okay to work with him. Mm-hmm.
in the midst of these accusations that he'd faced from his daughter. And you said you were one of the few people who came out at the time and said, you know, unless I learn more information, like, I'd love to work with him again. And that was a moment where, you know, you, much beloved, not really in any controversy, you know, maybe you got some pushback for that. Like, when you look back on that moment, like, is that something you feel like you can stand behind now that those winds might be changing again?
Oh, I don't know anything about anything. I'm a humble student of life and how I can contribute to the culture in any way. He seems to have been retired, and
he does seem mostly retired.
Yeah,
mostly retired.
I mean, made many, many films.
I've enjoyed some of his movies.
I've alluded to, you know, you saying, I forgot my mantra, your line in Annie Hall. One line, an amazing line. You had a couple years there where you were just knocking them out with little bit parts at the beginning of your career. But I've heard you say that you might have had a couple other lines in Annie Hall that didn't make the final cut. Oh. Do you remember any of them?
Yeah, let me see.
You're on the phone at the party.
His girlfriend's beautiful.
Yeah, she's great looking. Great. Little tad on the androgynous side. Mr. But Mr. Davis.
Yeah, I forgot my mantra.
I was on the phone at the party, and Paul Simon and Diane Keaton were part of that the moving shot. I was on the phone, and I improvised a little bit. Thank goodness only that, pithy line was left in the movie, and that's the way it goes. But I had a good time on that. That was the 70s. That's around 74. I had done Death Wish and then this Altman movie, California Split.
California Split, right.
Which I recommend. And Nashville, which I'm crazy about. And then came Between the Lines in 76.
A great transition.
That's right.
A professional music critic myself. Mm. It's nice to see.
Much respect.
It's nice to see the profession honored on screen. Mm-hmm. Correct. As an actor, but who has a musician background and who still performs and plays music, you must be aware that there are kindred spirits floating around in Hollywood of people who are actors who also have musical proclivities. You know that.
Oh, yeah. Who play music.
Mm-hmm. Could you channel your character in Between the Lines? And could we do some music criticism?
Well, I'd like to, you know, I don't like to say bad things.
If you want to be the Peter Travers of this exercise,
me to say the bad things, that's fine. But can I play some things?
Anybody you want.
Can I play some things for you?
That's catchy.
Kind of goes.
I like it. You know, Chuck Berry. I like Chuck Berry, and that's a little reminiscent of that. But I off the top of my head, I wouldn't know who that is.
So that is Smoking in Bed by Billy Bob Thornton from about 2001.
Yep.
That sounds good to me. Yeah. I like that. You know what song I really get off on? You know, what's that song that Quentin Tarantino used in the movie where John Travolta is dancing with Uma Thurman in Pulp Fiction? Sure. What's that song?
The Pulp Fiction song is,
you know,
Someone Yell It Out.
Yeah. C'est la vie, c'est la vie. You never can tell.
Yes.
Oh, you never can tell.
All right, here's another one.
Okay. Just another city sidewalk,
summer night making small talk. Oh, beautiful. Some bottom in the voice. It has some bottom in the voice.
Bottom, but I like that nice, breathy middle. And this...
More?
Those high notes. If you like. I don't know who that is. Nice song. You know, I don't get the lyrics for quite a time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, I'm trying to listen to those. Like, I know those lyrics. They sound like they were important. Like, I should...
Yes.
and poetical. Like, I should really
I'm always saying
I should
that.
Be getting them.
But you're a melody
you know
guy.
What I like to do? I like to
print
read
it out or see it on.
With it. That would enhance that experience.
So that was Alicia Witt.
Oh.
Of Twin Peaks and early Dune.
Yeah.
I love
David
Lynch.
Yeah.
David, wait a minute. What'd she do? She was in the reboot of Twin Peaks.
And you know,
I saw
she was
18
the,
hours of that and then started to watch it again.
She was the baby in the original Dune. She was the talking baby. And then came all the way back around.
She was on Mr. Holland's Opus.
Right. Oh, yeah, she was.
She's the famous D girl in the episode of Sopranos where Christopher goes to LA.
Didn't see it, but I like her. She's
You've
fantastic.
Never seen The Sopranos.
Well, I didn't see that episode. Yeah,
okay.
Laura.
I like this.
Laura.
So this one's not on your playlist, I assume.
I don't know. I don't know who that is.
This is Vincent Gallo, director of Brown Bunny, mm-hmm. Buffalo 66.
I've heard a little Vincent Gallo before.
Star of Tetra. I didn't recognize,
but I've heard, no, I wouldn't have gotten that. I know Vincent Gallo. Mm-hmm. I haven't seen him in a while, a little bit. That's something. I know that he does that, and I think he was sort of had some kind of popularity in Japan.
I think that's right.
Yeah.
How about that? And I think he gave me a CD of some of his things. Yeah. And I like that kind of lyrical, poetical, conversational tone.
Yeah.
There we go. Rock critic. You're doing
sounds very good.
You're inhabiting the critic.
I would do something. I wrote it. They asked me, I think Rolling Stone or somebody, I asked me in 1976, after that movie, it just came back to me. I haven't thought of it since then. They asked me to write a criticism of the new Natalie Cole album.
Wow.
Which I did.
What'd they pay you for that in the 70s?
Nothing. With all things, I could do better now, I'm sure. Yeah. But that, you know what that reminded me when it came on? You know, who sang, in the dark, walking in the park, watching summer turn to spring.
I need a Shazam when I'm hanging out with you.
I feel like making love to you. But that's the time I feel like making dreams come true. Who sang that?
I don't know. Do you ever use the thing on Google where you can sing into Google and it'll tell you what song you're singing?
I love that. I love all those apps. I was just talking about it where you can point it at a tree.
Roberta Flack?
It's Roberta Flack.
There we go.
Thank you. Thank you, Roberta Flack, the great Roberta Flack. Didn't that sound a little like that, Vincent Gallo?
Walking in the park. Yeah. Vincent Gallo and Roberta Flack. I don't know if anyone's ever put those two names in the same sentence, but that's why
we're
here. All right, we're going to play a couple more, and then we're going to keep it moving.
Mm.
You might recognize this one.
I like this. I feel like getting a facial already. I feel like a massage. I'm in a spa.
Mm-hmm. This one's near and dear to you.
It is?
It is.
I love it. Very childlike. Reminds me of the score to Rosemary's Baby.
It does have that light ominous.
It's not scary.
A haunted lullaby.
Could be haunted. Could be scary a little bit. Yeah. This isn't Scarlett Johansson, is it?
Oh, it is.
I've never heard it, but...
Nothing but
so you know she has an album of Tom Waits covers. This is I Wish I Was in New Orleans from Anywhere I Lay My Head.
I should know Scarlett's this. I will look that up Tom immediately Waits and consume it with gusto.
Came out
and
in 2008. Relish. I recently recommended it to a room full of tweens.
Oh, yeah, that's right. We were talking about
know,
it.
I don't know
we
what did, came over me, but I did.
We did a seminar for Take Your Kids to Work Day. Make a play.
And they liked a Scarlett song from Sing, which is the children's movie she's done songs for. And I said, kids, if you like Scarlett's voice, go listen to her Tom Waits.
There's more
track.
Of that. There's a lot of tracks.
An entire album.
Similar. I love it. She's such a unique artist and so intellectually, sensitively rich and gifted. And her voice. How that fingerprint of a vocal cord, you know, because we've all got that.
Yes.
Asserts itself in her acting, that movie Her, you know. Mm-hmm. Isle of Dogs, she plays Peppermint. Ah, she's got that, you know. It's just great.
But you're somebody who could do a similar voiceover and be instantly recognized. You did early Apple
like
ads.
Apple commercials, yeah.
You can take a piece of music, put it under your footage, and all of a sudden people are laughing, crying. I don't know, whatever you want. I've got cheesy ideas, but you'll do something creative that'll make you want to go, ooh, let's watch that again and again and again and again.
Steve Jobs called me at home and said, hey, here's where you want to do
true
these
stories?
Things. Yeah. And then Shia Day, they come over here. Here's what we want to do. I said, hey, let me improvise a little bit. Turn the clock on. Let me give me the gist of what you want to say. Yeah. Okay. Put the clock so I can see it okay, Apple. Hey, here's, you know, I was doing that before I knew anything about what I was talking about either.
What was Steve Jobs' ask, though? What was Steve Jobs calls you up and says, Jeff,
Unless I dreamed this, I believe he did. We really want you to do this. And
did he say why you? What aspect of your gusto?
I forget.
You had to bring into the role.
This is why I need to be present. Like that play which I saw recently here. Our town. Mm. We all need to learn that lesson of, hey, if we were dead, we'd come back and go and pay more attention.
Yes.
We'd go, I was only with these guys for this amount of time. Why wasn't I more awake? Why didn't I appreciate it more? Wasn't I more grateful?
As Bad Bunny says, I should take more photos.
I should take more photos. Well, however you translate, whatever it means to you, that's true. So how did I start? What was I saying?
Steve Jobs.
So
he had the turtleneck on. He picks up the phone.
Were
you expecting the call, or do you think it was a prank?
They say sit at the house and wait for Steve Jobs to call.
No, I forget. I think he called. Likewise, I think during that time, I was asked, because I'd already done a couple of commercials, and I didn't, the upshot of this is I didn't appreciate it enough. I didn't know what moment we were at and who he was in such a special way. And so I flew up to San Francisco and introduced him to the stage when he came on and did one of his
Apple Festival conference or whatever.
At the annual, big thing with the turtle. Wow.
And I went, what can I say about Steve Jobs?
The keynote, that's what they call it.
I went, okay. I didn't stay there
and watch.
Go, here I am. No. Can you imagine? I know. Yeah.
You might recognize this voice from a different context.
I don't know.
Jamie Foxx.
Oh.
That's Summertime.
Way before the fame.
So 1994.
Yeah. That's
peak R&B, Jamie Foxx.
But he's a legitimate R&B singer who can do whatever he wants. That's fantastic.
And later in his career, he had a bunch of actual legitimate big radio hits. This is an earlier era.
So it's good. So good, I like Teddy Pendergrass. I like a lot of people. Hey, right. I'll bet your listeners know this. Do you know this song here? Oh, here, this reminds me of, I had some problems. No one could seem to solve them. But you found the answer.
Oh, yeah.
Something like that.
Who's that? That's, it's DeBarge.
Exactly right. Michael DeBarge, who I ran into at a clothing store at Maxfield's in Los Angeles. Believe it or not.
I know it well.
Yeah.
When you came to New York as a young actor and were on Broadway, I'm wondering, look, you're here, you're at the Met Gala, you're at the after parties, you're out at the GQ party till 2 a.m. New York nightlife of the 1970s, was that on your radar at all? Were you at Max's Kansas City, Mud Club? Like, were you at those places?
No, I wasn't. I was a good boy. I'm still a good boy. And I came, I felt, off the leash, from being from Pittsburgh. And
that's what
New
I'm
York
saying.
City, I was staying.
Bright lights, big city.
It was a bit, Hey, what's this from? New York City, just like I pictured it. What's that? Oh, that's Stevie Wonder, who we saw last night at the Met Gala.
Sure.
Singing that song. Mm-hmm. A boy is born in Hightown, Mississippi.
Yep.
Yeah. It's New York, just like I pictured it. Yeah, that's how I was when I came, and it was kind of dangerous. That's where we did Death Wish in 73. But I lived in a nice little apartment near the school, neighborhood playhouse, and then I was on Broadway at the St. James. So I was around there. No,
You weren't downtown. Not in that scene.
Or at any of those places. I went to bed and was trying to, I had things to learn, things to do. And then I got jobs, miraculously enough, and I was on the job. I was not such a club or nightlife person. Now thinking about it, I might have at least poked my head in and go, wow.
It's like the Steve Jobs thing.
Yeah, it's like the Steve Jobs thing. Same opportunity. Sunset Strip in LA in the 80s, nothing?
No. Not real. Well, you know, I saw some concerts. I went into the Roxy.
There we go.
And saw Gil Scott-Heron in the late 70s. And Stevie Wonder came in and sat in on the drums that night. While I was here in New York in 71, 72, I went to the Fillmore East and saw Taj Mahal, who had a big band with two tubas that night, and the Chambers Brothers. I went crazy. It was just great. So, you know, I've been here and there, but for clubs and, hanging out, it was never my thing. Even now, when I go into a dark, with a lot of things, and I hear boom, boom, gong, 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 and I can't hear and have a conversation, it's not my favorite thing.
Okay.
Yeah.
No Cafe Carlisle. It's no Cafe Carlisle.
It's but no cafe. Well, that's an unusual. That's a gem left over. And I do like that. Yeah. I mean, call me old fashioned.
So every episode of Popcast ends with a snack tasting.
Okay, yes.
And
this being Bobcast. Hey, by the way, have we said everything in this Bobcast about this record? Have I said everything about, I'll be around and about, you can get this record.
Nailed it.
We place these standards. I mean, you know the songs that are on the album.
Yeah. We got the visuals.
I mean, did you hear the album?
Yeah, of course.
You know, I can hold my head up and say, please take a listen to this because if you're a jazz aficionado who know all these songs, the guys I play with are virtuosos, I believe. And you'll see something, you'll hear something very sophisticated and pleasing. And if you don't know these songs, if you just know a couple of my movies and you've just shown up at a gig or buy this record, it's not jazz that maybe your friends say, oh, I don't like jazz. There's so many notes. I don't know there's no song so there. Notes. It goes on too long. Yes. I don't know what I say.
It's so many notes.
Seems too self-indulgent.
Fewer notes, please.
But there's improvisation. There's great improvisation on this and blowing, but they're songs. They're catchy. They're delicious. They're lovable. Like that. You know, I'd be remiss if I didn't say that. Don't you agree,
Doctor? Also what I would say is if it did not have your name on it, no one would say, this isn't a good jazz album. You know, people aren't, if they show up for you, they get you. But if they're showing up for jazz, they get the jazz.
While we respect your medical professionals, not going to let you out of here without trying a snack. You walked in, we showed you our pantry, which is recently refilled with an array of heinous looking things.
Nefarious. Say heinous or heinous?
Heinous, I think.
So you took your choice and
he asked for the least processed.
Right. So you looked for something.
We do tend towards the process.
Let's get a shot of these.
I'm a little anti.
I get it. We're a pro, not pro processed food in the spiritual sense, but for the purpose of this 3-minute extravaganza that we do once a week. Oh. We are willing to go, as you can see, some very dark places.
Just for the shadowy entertainment of it. You know, I'd be a guinea pig. I'd nibble on anything that you want. But if I'm really going to eat something, if I get a vote, is some real food.
So these are sweet potato gummy bars,
in South Korea. Where I was a few weeks ago.
I've never been there. Sir, I'd love to go there.
Would you like the purple or the yellow?
Three different flavors.
Take whatever speaks to you.
Are we going to all pass them around?
Sure.
Let's
all have
tear
a nice
off a piece.
This is, you've left
we'll
me.
We'll do a tear and a pass.
I'm going to give you the sweet potato and the cacao.
Okay, so this, I've got sweet potato and pumpkin.
And I have sweet potato and cacao.
And I think I have just the original sweet potato.
So I think you should go first. I think you should taste that first.
Be my pleasure. I'm nothing if not an adventurous person and an adventurous eater. I like to think of myself as I've tasted everything. I think I've tasted all kind of food. Some people, how about those people you meet and you go, I've never had tuna fish. Or I've never had a piece of.
John's a little bit of that guy.
I'm a tiny bit.
John's
picky.
A little bit of that guy. I bet you we could find something not that deep down the rungs that John has not
tried. That's probably, I regret to say, this is a big issue in my relationship. Yeah.
How long have you been ensconced?
We're 2.5 years in.
Oh, honeymoon.
You've
only just begun.
She's a true gourmand. And this is occasionally a struggle when we go out to eat because her palate is very broad and mine is very deep in certain areas, but selectively so.
Snack food specifically.
You like oysters?
Only fried.
Only fried?
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah. I don't want to be disrespectful, but have you seen a bad way to start a sentence. But have you seen the film Snowpiercer?
Love Snowpiercer. I love that director, and my friend Tilda Swinton was brilliant in it.
Of course, that's a Bong Joon-ho. And I dare I say, Tilda playing a Goldblum-esque role. That could have been you there in the conductor's car.
I sit at her feet. But
so I'm going to go ahead and say that this sweet potato cacao bar looks exactly like the bars that they eat in that film, which I won't spoil the film, but let's just say not appetizing.
All right, well, we're going to tear off a hunk and then pass around.
First of all, here's my first impression, Dr. Critic, Mr. Critic. Even though it's named gummy something, I would turn me off because I don't like gummy. My kids love gummy bears, gummy worms, anything gummy.
We're like your kids.
I don't like gummy things because they stick in my teeth.
Right, and you're Mr. No Cavity.
That's right. And I'm very good. My oral hygiene is getting better every day. My flossing, my everything. But this doesn't look, this doesn't seem gummy-ish. This seems, No, it's not gummy-ish. It's kind of hearty and
well,
kind
maybe
of,
the, maybe the ex, it's not gummy in the candy sense.
No.
But it is candied in like the candied yam sense.
It's one of the worst things I've ever tasted in my life. And I'd never say that.
I love it. I love it. It tastes. It actually tastes like a. Hey, you ever have like?
Can we pass them around? And
yeah, I might be. I might be done though. Try the cacao is a hard place to start.
I'll try it.
This is you try. This is the. This is sweet potato. Just I don't know what those taste like, but this is tastes like.
Want to try? This one has pumpkin in it. Mm. I ripped it off. You don't have to bite the same.
I love pumpkin. Look what I'm going to do because you didn't touch this. I am. I wouldn't call myself a germaphobe, but
you can do it from the other side. Yeah.
Oh no.
Wow, this does smell vile.
Flavor,
the
I mean,
cacao one.
Quite flavorless. No sugar, certainly.
Hey, what's that thing?
ASMR.
ASMR. Yeah. There you go.
Mm-hmm. Do anybody getting a kick out of me and chewing this?
Yeah.
No. This is like a brownie at the worst vegan bakery. Yeah,
it's the worst vegan brownie I've ever had.
In a Midwestern town that should not have a vegan bakery.
I like sinful thing. I like, you know, real brownies. But I like those vegan brownies. And likewise, I like the one that you rejected here that has some pumpkin in it.
They are all yours.
And I like this sweet potato because it tastes very much like sweet potato.
Where are we?
I think
out
it's
of
made out of sweet potato.
It is.
Very
I think
few
it's pure. What,
ingredients.
What are we ranking that out of 10?
10 Goldblums out of a possible 10.
10 Goldblums.
Gets my highest rating.
And the pumpkin too?
Also 10.
10 gold.
Because
I've never done this before. I'm a zero.
Okay, I'm going to say
zero.
For the cacao one.
I wish
one,
to never see these again in my life.
For the cacao one, that's 2 Goldblums. The pumpkin, I'm going to go, that's 7.5.
Wow.
I know what to send you a whole basket of for your birthday. Forget we had this conversation. I want you to be surprised. Ding dong.
That was an adventure.
Yes.
And it's leaving an aftertaste as well.
Oh, yeah.
I like it. Thank you, first of all, to Jeff Goldblum.
I can't. The gratitude is all on my side. I can't thank you enough.
Unbelievable.
That's the button.
Thank you for being
that
here.
That is our show. Thank you. Every podcast ever is at nytimes.com/podcast. Get at us on YouTube, Instagram, or TikTok at podcast. Email us, podcast@nytimes.com. We're here every week. Jeff Goldblum also here every week.
It's from now on.
From now on. I wish. Permanent third chair.
I hope so. This is like, I recommend this. This also gets 10 Goldblums out of a possible 10 Goldblums.
Tell your friends.
Tell a friend.
Yeah. I will tell everybody. And what's the song we could finish on now that you're liquored up with the sweet potato? That
should be one of yours.
Yeah.
Anything. Well, it should be anything that says, that has goodbye. You know, like.
You know what it is. It's the best is yet to come because I feel like that was the through line of your conversation.
Every time we say goodbye, I die.
I actually think every time we say goodbye.
Every time we say goodbye.
I think that's the one.
I wonder why.
So sing us out, please.
Why the gods above me, et cetera, et cetera. Goodbye.
Every single time we say goodbye.